I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman has become one of the most recognizable figures in state government. It doesn't hurt that he's 6'8 and he wears tattoos. Last year, he visited all 67 Pennsylvania counties on a listening tour about legalizing recreational marijuana, something he and Governor Wolf support. He's also worked to speed up and loosen up the commutation process for prisoners as chair of the Board of Pardons. He said no to moving into the lieutenant governor's residence, opening the pool last summer for local kids to swim. When he was the proudly progressive mayor of Braddock, PA, he supported Bernie Sanders in the 2016 Democratic primary, and Sanders supported him for lieutenant governor. Fetterman has broken with Sanders as well as some leaders and activists in the Democratic Party who want to ban fracking nationwide. He worries it would hurt parts of Pennsylvania that are making a comeback because of good-paying union jobs in the natural gas industry. John Fetterman is in Philadelphia and joins us on Radio Times to talk about all of this and more. And nice to have you with us here in our studios.
It's always great to be in Philadelphia.
Well, it's a good city, and it is Wawa country, just so you know.
You know, and I don't hold that against, you know. I like to say that a Sheetz fan, or excuse me, a Wawa fan is someone who's never been to a Sheetz, you know. But I proudly carry their flag into the heart of Wawa country here.
Absolutely. Let me just give out the ways that our listeners can join the conversation. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. We have time, and I do want to talk about your position on fracking. Mm-hmm. Because this is so, I think, critical to the state and also the upcoming presidential race. You're quoted in the New York Times about a month ago. You said in Pennsylvania, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of related jobs that would be unemployed overnight if there were a ban on fracking. Pennsylvania is a margin play, and an outright ban on fracking isn't a margin play. Help us understand where you stand on this fracking issue.
Well, the thing is that unfortunately, fracking has increasingly become kind of a binary litmus test in Pennsylvania and nationwide. Either if you're for it, you want the world to burn and you're not paying attention to climate science. And if you're opposed to it, that it confers some special level of virtue or that you want to save the planet. And the truth is much more complex than that. And this idea that 62% of our nation's electricity comes from natural gas. And you to just up and say it all stops on day one I take office, you know, I constantly, when I was mayor of my community, would have to work with residents to get their gas turned back on. They couldn't even afford to pay their bills. It's like, you know, day one, how do you, heat your house? How do you cook your food? How do we generate the electricity that we need when 60% of it is off the table now? It's complex.
Would you, though, looking into the future, because there's the problem of methane, of course, when
Absolutely.
It comes to fracking, it's not like there aren't environmental impacts.
There's tremendous environmental impacts. And I say that Republicans, I think there's a big truth in American politics. I think Republicans must get honest and confront the climate reality. But I think Democrats must get more honest and confront an energy reality here. And I think that the collision of those two truths is no more pronounced than in Pennsylvania is. And we have Governor Wolf, who I think has done, the best job of any governor in the country in trying to walk that line through divided government. I would remind your listeners that both the Republicans, control the House and the Senate. And that's much like divided government at a national level. And Governor Wolf is incredibly sensitive to environmental concerns, but he's also very much aware mm-hmm. that Pennsylvania is second only to Texas in energy generation. And I ask people like, hey, New York banned fracking. Okay. So is it because they don't use natural gas anymore? But they buy all their natural gas from Pennsylvania. So I don't really consider that eco-virtue to ban fracking in your state when you're saying, well, I'll buy all of it from you. It's complex.
Do you see, though, natural gas as a bridge fuel? People who have supported it saying, you know, this is going to get us out of the coal business and closer to renewables.
Everybody, at least on the Democratic side, agrees that we have to transition away from fossil fuels. And I do. The science is clear. But if you suggest that there's a longer threshold or a timeline to do that, then you're using the industry talking points and things like that. And it's just not true. And that's why the governor's plan of Restore PA, which is to impose a severance tax on natural gas, it's as the only state in the country where hydraulic fracturing occurs, we're the only one that doesn't have this. And it would generate $4.5 billion over that 20-year window, and that would go to fix things like Philadelphia's toxic schools and rural broadband and addressing blight and other community development projects. It's basically saying as we wind down, we have this opportunity to take these funds, borrow against that income stream, and really help rebuild Pennsylvania.
How many jobs are we talking about, either related to the natural gas industry or even the fossil fuel industry, and then, of course, all the sort of related supportive jobs?
Tens of thousands. But what also is very rarely mentioned is that there are thousands of landowners, because fracking in Pennsylvania mostly occurs in private lands. So there's an income stream generated for their mineral rights to allow that to happen. And oftentimes they are more rural county folks that are struggling, or they're farmers that are trying to add to their income stream. So it's complicated. And I think the Republicans must become more accountable from a climate perspective, saying that we want to make sure we have the most stringent, most rigorous standards environmentally, because we believe this is an important industry. And they should understand, too, that we must transition away from fossil fuels in Pennsylvania and nationally.
How good do you think the environmental regulations, though, in Pennsylvania are? I mean, clearly there have been spills, there are leaks, there are problems with...
Without a doubt. And the governor is constantly trying to advance the frontier of those kind of controls and those kinds of large-scale environmental improvements. But he's constantly at loggerheads. We can't even get key members of the legislature to agree to even tax it. We have the votes to pass Restore PA, but certain members will not run the bill, so to speak. They won't put it
up. They sit on it, right?
Yeah, they bottle it up, and they won't run the bill. If they would just say, okay, let's see where everyone's at, this bill would pass. And it would be, in my opinion, a transformative amount of resources that would benefit both urban blue areas like Philly and deep red areas across Pennsylvania. I say a blighted, abandoned home looks the same in a blue county as it does a red county. And if anything, I think it would benefit red county Pennsylvania more. And those, the resistance to that is actually ironically coming from those counties.
Well, I wonder whether how much of this is a political issue, not just for you, but I think for everybody, in that we're talking about the more western part of the state,
sure,
the state that had supported Democrats in the past, many of whom then supported Donald Trump in 2016, whether there's are some political calculations here.
It would be naive to assume that there isn't, because a universal ban on day one plays directly into Trump's hands and saying, well, look at these crazy Democrats. It's like, you know, he's already weaponized it. It's like, hey, honey, do you want to watch TV tonight? I don't know. Was it sunny today? I mean, just playing up on all these things. And it also speaks to the fact that I don't believe the president, you know, he or she couldn't, you know, up and ban fracking on day one by executive order either anymore. They can ban cattle ranching. I mean, maybe they could on federal land, but the overwhelming majority of fracking occurs on private lands.
Right, which is very different. Interestingly, though, a Franklin and Marshall College poll looking at fracking in Pennsylvania found that 48% of registered voters supported a ban on fracking, compared to 39% who opposed it. But when you looked at it in more partisan lens, Democrats largely oppose fracking. Republicans largely support.
Well, and then a lot of those things aren't included in that. Like, well, what happens when your home heating bill triples? What happens when, you know, you go to plug, you know, something in and it's like, where does our electricity come? I would encourage all your listeners The New York Times did an amazing article back in 2018 that breaks down each state, where and how they produce their electricity. And it's fascinating. And states that it plays to their intrinsic strengths, like Texas with wind power, that's scaling up. You know, it's this idea that it's 50 different states generating their own electricity by different means. And Pennsylvania, through with Governor Wolf, wants to transition as much away from fossil fuels, but also acknowledging that it is not ready to go live without a net, especially, you know, most people don't realize Pennsylvania generates most of its electricity from nuclear. Is the number one. And Three Mile Island, I grew up next to Three Mile Island when it had the meltdown. And there's no appetite for more nuclear.
No, there isn't.
And I think it requires everyone to have an honest conversation. It's like, well, you want zero emissions? How can you take nuclear out of the equation? And that's what I mean by it's like, you know, a more kind of honest accounting of where we're at, realizing that no one, certainly on the Democratic side, is disagreeing that we are in an urgent climate situation.
Let me read some comments. A tweet from David. I totally understand the dangers and hurting families if you take away these jobs. The federal government needs to step up and protect these workers so that they can transition to cleaner energy while stopping the unbelievably dangerous practice of fracking. And there are green jobs in Pennsylvania. And
absolutely.
I do remember actually Hillary Clinton going to, I think it was West Virginia, saying, you know, we'll take these coal mining jobs and we'll retrain you. And she got in hot water for saying that.
She articulated it in a way that was taken out of context and weaponized horribly. And it's unfair, but also that's politics. But there's no ambiguity in like, say, a fracking ban. You know, there is, it's like, and that's what I meant by a margin play. Pennsylvania went to Donald Trump by 44,000 votes, which is a profoundly slim margin. And Governor Wolf and I carried Pennsylvania by 852,000 votes. So that's nearly a 900,000 vote swing. Trump's good, but I don't think he's 900,000 vote good unless you are radically divergent from Governor Wolf's position as a good, solid, progressively aligned Democrat who's been managed to create enormous progress and success through divided government. It matters. And I constantly hold the governor up as a blueprint for any successful Democrat because we have the deeply divided government in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania looks like our country, you know, blue coasts, so to speak,
right.
Islands of blue through big seas of red. So I think it's very analogous.
We're almost having a break here, but it sounds like you're saying, at least for Democrats in Pennsylvania, banning fracking is a losing proposition and the Democrats could lose the state to the president.
I say it's not a fully honest response, and politically it's absolutely. You're not going to get any more votes, and it can cost you on the downside. And Pennsylvania is that margin play, and it could cost you hundreds of thousands of votes. And I, frankly, would be unwilling to take that kind of risk given the stakes of 4 more years.
And that's Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman joining us this hour on Radio Times. We've been talking about fracking. We do want to talk about commutation process. Also, this recreational marijuana legalizing tour that he went on. And again, you can join our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
It's Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. Let me read a couple of more comments related to fracking, and then I do want to talk about your work as chair of the Board of Pardons. An email from John. Many of us understand that you can't just change fracking overnight, so while supporting temporary measures, what renewable technologies are you looking into implementing?
All kinds of ones. The governor is a huge proponent of that. This idea that because you acknowledge fracking as the reality that it is and that you seek to harvest an enormous pool of money to invest it into Philadelphia's schools and broadband in rural Pennsylvania. It doesn't make you indifferent to the climate crisis. It makes you, I think, an effective leader that two things can be true at the same time. And it's, to me, it's the ultimate transition migration away that also would benefit Pennsylvania in a fiscal way that I think, quite frankly, we desperately need.
Here's an email from Walter. When is the governor going to start conducting health studies on fracking as he promised in November? Would he be willing to stop fracking if the cancers were linked to fracking?
Well, I'm not going to speak to the governor, but I know it's something that the governor cares about very deeply, and it's something that he's closely involved. Individuals ask the governor to expand the scope and the resources for the potential cancer cluster in my part of the state, in Washington County, and he readily wanted to do that. Like, people need to understand that the governor cares deeply and understands both sides of the equation. And he's trying to navigate a solution that acknowledges realities, whether it's energy, industry, jobs, against environment, through a deeply divided government where they can bottle up popular legislation, whether it's fracking or cannabis, just by virtue of the positions that they hold in key committees or otherwise.
Just one more question about natural gas and the sort of related industries. What impact has that had on Braddock, where you were the mayor for a couple of years,
sure.
number of years?
Well, we have right now an opportunity. U.S. Steel. I live across the street personally. My family, my children live not in the LG mansion.
Yes,
directly across the street from perhaps the largest industrial site in all of Pennsylvania. It's the Edgar Thompson plant. And U.S. Steel wants to invest $1.5 billion.
Billion,
with a B. And create the world's greenest steel mill. Like, the finest facility in the world, literally. And there's been some opposition and pushback from members of our party that believe that pollution and other things outweighs that. And I simply disagree. If we're all downwind globally, why would we want that steel produced under zero environmental and labor standards, you know, elsewhere, when we can do it better, cleaner, greener anywhere, and have 3,500 family-sustaining union jobs as part of that that bargain? You know, we all can't work at Google. You know, this idea that we still need to manufacture things and do in Pennsylvania. And that's a prime example of this debate that is raging within my party.
Part of your job as lieutenant governor, and this, you know, goes back to really the Constitution in Pennsylvania, is that you're chair of the Board of Pardons, a part of your job. And it's a part of your job that seems like you have really embraced.
It's a calling that has resonated deep within me in ways I can't fully articulate.
Really?
To understand, as I fully did, how arbitrary and indifferent or unnecessary the state of affairs are in our criminal justice system has created a sense of urge. Like we have roughly 5,300 people condemned to die in prison in Pennsylvania.
Life without parole.
Why aren't we proactively auditing these cases? And there are some people by virtue, like the Tree of Life shooter, or they're a violent predator against women or children, whatever, that should remain in prison. But there are, I would say, thousands that it's not making anyone safer. It's not in the interest of justice, particularly if you didn't take a life directly. Like, why are we, you know, Secretary Wetzel said something profound on a panel I was with him. He's like, we could release, you know, a third of our prison population and not make us any less safe and save $800 to $900 million a year annually. And I'm like, that's a profound thought. And think of what Pennsylvania could do instead of warehousing these individuals till extinction, and reinvest those monies elsewhere.
How do you decide on commutation? It has to be unanimous. You're part of a board. I was looking in 20...
It's tragic.
In 2019, I think there were 41 cases that came before you. You voted 30 yes commutation and 11 no commutation. How do you decide?
Well, there's any number of factors. First and foremost, it's the risk that they would pose if they were released. Like, for one example, there was an individual that was still actively stalking and harassing his victims on, from prison. Yeah. And their family came in and testified. It's like, and you just could see that there would be a real harm there. But the ones that I voted for is, to be clear, the board's vote does not free them. It allows it to proceed to the governor's desk, and he alone can decide whether to sign that or not. And the governor, as do I, strongly believes in a second chance, and he, I'm using just a slang, but he wants paper on his desk. And that's an understanding that he and I share because we both believe in this so intensely. And that is my goal. And one of the things thwarting it is that of the 9 states nationally that have pardons boards, we are the only one that has the unanimous requirement. Huh. So that places us to the right of Texas, which still executes, mentally, disabled individuals. So that should be alarming to every Pennsylvanian. And to move that back to majority, simple majority, would require a constitutional amendment.
Let me quote something you wrote. It was in the Philadelphia Inquirer, actually, the very end of December. You said December 20th was one of the most dismaying days of my life. You go on to say an overwhelming majority of the people who come before the board come from impoverished and abusive backgrounds and are people of color who have been locked up their entire adult lives. Many were themselves victims of familial and societal circumstances that statistically almost guaranteed they'd end up right where they are in prison. And then you go on to describe several cases where you felt like these were people that really needed to have their sentence commuted, but it didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, not only did I feel like they should have their sentences commuted, but at a minimum, they deserve to advance to the governor's desk and let him decide. And because we have this 5-0 threshold, and because we have other members of the board that might disagree, my philosophy is always like, look, let's err on the side of mercy. Put it on the governor's desk. He's the decider here, ultimately. It's not my pen that frees him. It's not your pen. It's the governor's. So let him be the one that arbitrates this. And by erring on the side of mercy, you're able to free people like George Trudell and Naomi Blunt, both two shining examples of exactly what I'm talking about.
And they work for the pardons board.
They work, and they help respectively men and women, with their applications. Some people in the public think that you're talking about all bunch of Hannibal Lecters in prison, and they're not. They're like your grandfather. They're like your grandmother. Or they did something or were part of something terrible when they were 18. Like I tell people, watch The Shawshank Redemption if you haven't already, and think about Morgan Freeman sitting in front of you after doing 40 years. Would you say, no, you should die in prison? Most people would say, of course not. That's what a lot of this we are. And if you're not moved by the morality of the argument, moved by why would we spend $60,000 a year or more warehousing these people until their death?
Mm-hmm. You described several people, including a woman named Henrietta Harris, and you wrote, has Department of Corrections full support for commutation after having served nearly 40 years for her role in a family tragedy. She is reconciled with her troubled past, including extensive abuse at the hands of the man she killed. She will now likely die in prison. I mean, once can she come before the board again?
Well, she would have to reapply unless there's significant intervention. And by that time, I won't be board, chairman of the Board of Pardons, et cetera. And also, she's Philadelphia. She grew up in Strawberry Mansion. The Horton brothers haunts me. These two individuals, 0 juvenile arrests, 0 adult criminal arrests, let alone convictions. They were arrested 25, 27. They were accused of participating as accomplices in an armed robbery that went awry. They were offered 4 years plea. Like, okay, you can, and they're like, no, we didn't do it. And they've been in prison now for 26 years as brothers. And they have not had one single misconduct ever. Ever in 26 years, 52 years of collective incarceration, 0. And their score, their risk score reoffending, 0. I've never seen one. And these are the it haunts me. And that these men and women should not die in prison. in our name, and they need to make it to the governor's desk.
Well, you also say the killer was only charged with third-degree murder, and he was paroled in 2008.
Exactly. And then there's another set of brothers, the Evans brothers. They carjacked someone, and they shouldn't have done that, and they should be punished. They don't dispute that they participated. They dropped the man off at a payphone to call for help, and like, all right, we're out. And he had a heart condition and died. And they offered them deals of 10 years if they plead. And they're like, no, we didn't kill him. We just stole his car. And they hit the jackpot and they got second degree murder. And they are now rounding the bases on 4 decades in prison when 10 would have been justice enough. You know, so we're going to say, well, snooze, you lose. And these men are now, and I'm like, I refuse to let it go. I won't let it go. These brothers need to be let out, and both sets, and Henrietta Harris, because they are no longer a threat to society. You have the literal wardens of their prisons in public begging, let these people out. Why aren't we doing this? And there's no good answer.
Well, I wonder, and this goes back years. There was a, someone who had your job before you was lieutenant governor. They let someone out.
Yeah, Mark Single. It's the McFadden tragedy.
And he went to New York.
In 1994. And the process was radically different back then. Please understand, when someone's commuted, they are sentenced to life on parole. And they spend the first year at a halfway house, and it's supervised. It's very comprehensive. But you're telling me that two men that have consistently professed their innocence for their entire lives have never been arrested after growing up in some very challenging neighborhoods in Philadelphia, have the warden begging for their release. The look on the Horton brothers' father still haunts me. And I can imagine, because he and his brother are the same age difference as my own, and the horror of that knock on the door, and you're taken away, and your life is gone in an instant, and you were off. What kind of prosecutor thinks that they did it if they're saying, well, 4 years and we'll call it even, you know? And who turns that down? If I shot someone and I could walk away for 4 years, I'm taking that deal. But they are like innocent men. We didn't do this. And these are the kind of people, and we should in Pennsylvania absolutely have a full, and we're doing that, is understand what this population is, who it is. And I can tell you, out of Philadelphia, 84% are African American. 84% of LWOPs are
– what's LWOP?
Life Without Paroles.
Okay.
In Pennsylvania. And we have now uncovered rampant prosecutorial misconduct. You know, District Attorney Krasner's unit has exonerated 12 people so far. Rampant misconduct. And we can't allow that, because it makes us all less safe, and it makes us a much less just society when we're not doing everything in our power to make sure that we have no innocent people or wrongly convicted, in terms of this isn't a murder. Two, jackpot, this is more voluntary manslaughter or whatever. We need radical reforms. And the only way out now is through the Board of Pardons.
We've had on Radio Times Chester Holman. This was back in August. And Anthony Wright back a couple of years before that. Both men were gotten out of prison in Pennsylvania by the Innocence Project and are considered to be actually innocent. But we don't have in Pennsylvania any kind of compensation like other
None.
States do, that if you've served time and you were there as an innocent person, you get no recompense.
Think about that. I get incredulous and irritated if I get bumped from my flight, you know, and that's nothing. But you get compensated if that happens. Think about having a quarter century or more of your life stolen from you, your education, your best, you know, your prime years, it's incalculable. And to tell me that's not, you know, like if the state destroys something, it should be responsible for at least restoring part of it. I know someone who was wrongfully convicted of a terrible crime back in my home community. And he was exonerated by forensic DNA in the ski hat of the person that actually did it. And it wasn't him. And he's a broken man. He's in the throes of addiction. And I wouldn't have survived. I could not do 18 or 19 years in prison for a crime that I did not do. And this poor man is essentially homeless, and he has not received a dime of compensation. He has not received anything other than a shattered existence in response to being wrongfully convicted. And how, like, can you not want to, you know, make that right?
Well, what can, you're the chair of the Board of Pardons. I mean, you have a bully pulpit and you get to vote, but what else could you do for these
people? Is keep lobbying and just keep pushing. And it's just like, and you're not talking like, if you can sue someone for millions of dollars if you spill hot coffee on your lap, but you can't sue somebody for stealing a quarter century of your life and labeling you a murderer or a rapist or somebody, you know, like something's wrong. Something's wrong. And what is unreasonable to say, okay, for every year we took from you, we're going to pay you $50,000 or something that, you know, which certainly doesn't go anywhere near, but at least it's something. It's like, but to take you, to break you, and then just say, are bad, you know, good luck with that, I that's unconscionable.
But here you are, you know, the lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania. You've got the, and he's been on our show several times, the Pennsylvania Corrections Secretary Wetzel. You're two powerful people in Pennsylvania basically making the same argument that there are people, maybe thousands of people in Pennsylvania prisons who could be let out and we would be none – you know, we would be better off.
We must demand that. You know, when somebody's saying, I want you to slash my budget by a third and make me less relevant, you know, you need to pay attention to that. And like I said, if you're not, you know, moved by the morality of warehousing people until their death, you know, just say, why are we wasting literally hundreds of millions of dollars? You hate taxes. You hate big government. Okay, let's shrink the government. Let's, you know, put that towards offsetting property taxes, whatever floats your boat. But we shouldn't be spending it, and we're not going to make us any more unsafe. And that's a fact.
We're almost having a break. Do you and the Attorney General Shapiro, do you see this differently?
I don't speak for General Shapiro, and he and I, I believe, are going to kind of collaborate successfully on a lot of these issues with respect to commutation, and we have a situation here in Pennsylvania that, because we have the exceptionally charitable, kind, compassionate leadership of Governor Wolf, who embraces this. Keep in mind, no governors have ever really embraced this process, you know, since Milton Schapp. It's time for a change, and we have this very 3-year window to put a lot of the wrong things right.
Again, that's our guest on Radio Times today, Pennsylvania's Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. He's been on the job for a little more than a year now. He was the mayor of Braddock, PA before that, and has been very active in the Democratic Party. Again, you can join our conversation, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can call us 1-888-477-9499. Come back. This is Radio.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and if you're just joining us, John Fetterman, Pennsylvania's lieutenant governor, is our guest on the show today. Former mayor of Braddock, he's a strong advocate for the governor. He calls him best governor ever.
No lies detected.
wait, exactly. A really interesting bromance. But he's also taken up a number of causes to champion. We've been talking about criminal justice reform and commutation reform, also talking about his position on fracking. And I do want to talk about legalizing marijuana. You did go on a tour of I guess all the counties,
all 67,
a listening tour just to hear what people wanted to say to you. What was your takeaway?
My takeaway is that it is not a taboo subject. People very much wanted to talk and engage. And with a small minority of people, I would peg it somewhere around 15%, they consider it like the devil's tobacco or this kind of like, you know, like reefer madness kind of lens. The rest of people, like the Republican Party, has a very intense and strong libertarian streak, and they are fully like, bring it on, bring it on. You know, I talk to Republicans all the time, and they're like, why are we arguing over this plant? I mean, let's just do it. We're ready for it. We're absolutely ready for it.
So where are the breaks coming from?
I mean, it's the same old story. It's just a few key members in leadership on the Republican side that aren't willing to bring it to a vote. And I don't know why. It's like you don't have to love it or embrace it for yourself the same way I don't embrace tobacco or I infrequently drink. But I believe as an adult, you should have a right to do that safely, regulated and taxed in a manner that acknowledges that those choices. Not one Pennsylvanian online or in person thinks that marijuana is a dangerous drug the way crack and meth and these others are. Not one. Even those that aren't even supportive of recreational, they are like, this is silly. And our medical marijuana program has really changed the hearts of minds of people in ways that no amount of advocacy could have, because they see their grandma or their older uncle walking in and out. And these places look like an Apple store, only it's for cannabis. And they get relief. And they have, you know, we heard from veteran after veteran moved to tears often, like, I need this to feel normal. And because it's a Schedule I drug, the VA, they're like, the VA will give me as many blanket pills, you know, whatever. I don't need that. I need medical marijuana.
Well, it is a Schedule I drug. And as far as the federal government, just like heroin is, as far as the federal government is concerned, highly illegal.
It is. There's a lawsuit out in my part of the state where a woman who uses it medically to get away from opioids was denied housing because she is smoking marijuana. It's like how does this happen? She's legally using a plant under her doctor's supervision, and the federal government is denying her access to affordable housing because she's
using an illegal plant,
I mean, it's insane. It's insane.
So do you see any move? I mean, as you said,
there's absolutely movement, and we need to keep having the conversation. And I think there's going to be an external shock to the system. And I think it's going to be, if the Democrats win, then it's going to be taken off Schedule I. And that's going to create a revolution in terms of freeing up a lot of research and resources. Or our neighbor to right over the river is going to – I just spoke to some of their officials, and it's close. You know, Governor Cuomo is going on a personal visit of the states. It's – you know, and once they do that, we will be awash in legal marijuana. And why would we want to miss out on that? Our farmers want this. Our residents want this. It would create thousands of jobs. It would make our state more compelling for young people. It is all upside. And I don't understand any logical grounds that a prohibition of marijuana can argue on at this point. There's none.
It's interesting. The things that we talked about, fracking, prison reform, or certainly commutations, more commutations, maybe letting people out of prison who are nonviolent offenders, and even marijuana. It's all about money. I mean, that there is money in our hills.
Yeah. Well, if you're not, again, moved by the morality. And again, let's talk about the ugly reality of marijuana. 20,000 arrests every year for people using a plant, and that it is overwhelmingly people of color and communities of colors that are impacted by this. That is cruelty stacked on systemic racism, stacked on this unholy fear of a plant that was demonized for the purpose that it's serving to this day. We as a society should not and cannot tolerate that a day longer. And once we do, I think it's going to be the same kind of like liberating, you know, arc bending in the right direction, the way acknowledging same-sex weddings has been. I officiated the first one as a state official back in 2013 when it was illegal. And the governor, Corbett, threatened to send the police basically to charge me criminally. Think about that. And now you know, Pennsylvania is closer than ever than enacting LGBTQ protections statewide, equal protection under the law. And you look back and you're like, how did we think of that? And I think once – if we go legally nationally with marijuana, it's going to be like, how did we ever think that this was right?
Let me just do one more follow-up. City councils, and I'm quoting here, I guess it looks like the Inquirer, in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Erie, Allentown, Harrisburg, York, Lancaster, and most recently Norristown have all officially decriminalized possession of small amounts of marijuana, and yet arrests are up.
Yeah, because it's like one arrest like that is too many. And you want to take care of that, just legalize it. Just legalize it. I don't partake. I wouldn't partake when it becomes legal. It's a decision. And, you know, and people say, yeah, well, you've got kids. You want them using marijuana. I'm like, no, I don't. But if they experiment, I would want it to come from a safe, pure, tested, regulated, accessible source, like a Pennsylvania state store, for example, as opposed to someone on the corner where, you know, God knows what's in it. Mm-hmm. God knows what else they have to sell. You know, the whole other side. And that's, you know, and I'm like, oh, you're not for marijuana. Well, then you must want to ban alcohol. No, I don't. Well, then why? You know, alcohol and tobacco kills hundreds of thousands of people every year. Cannabis has zero known overdose deaths. And a group of doctors and medical professionals wanted to meet with me, and they kind of started to like, well, you know, you need to understand. And I said, just drop it right there. It's like, your community unleashed the Kraken on the American people with pain pills and opioids. And you're going to lecture me about a plant that has no known overdose deaths? It's like you have no moral standing in this debate. And you have a physician that refuses to prescribe marijuana to me is you know, misguided and wrong as a minister that would refuse to, you know, have officiate a same-sex wedding. You're out of step with reality, and send it my way. I can't tell you how many weddings I've done where they're like, they're in a smaller town and they're like, we can't. I'm like, that's shameful. That's a disgrace.
Let me get some more questions in. Actually, not exactly what we're talking about here, but one from Bruce. With the new absentee voting laws, and there are some new voting laws in Pennsylvania, absentee votes sometimes aren't fully counted until days after the election. Are there plans to fix this problem with the new law? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, well, it has been. We, you know, people aren't making as big a deal as I think we should. You can vote by mail now in Pennsylvania for the first time ever. First time ever. That means no lines, no missing, having to miss work. I mean, I personally think Election Day should be a national holiday. Why it's not, again, you know, like it's, well, we know why, because it's like that would make it easier for people to vote. And, you know, if you know you're not running on the best ideas, you want fewer people to vote or make it more difficult. But now you can vote by mail. And that's another tip of the hat that I give to my governor, because that's the first significant voting reform in Pennsylvania in like 80 years. And these are critical issues, and absentee ballots. And now it all goes into a system now where you can register to vote much closer now. I think it's 2 weeks now, 15 days. And the deadline is much more liberal now. And it just makes it a lot easier. So anyone that has difficulty now can just mail it in, and you can register online, and a lot of really important changes that you know, and we're not, you know, the governor isn't done, but he's also limited by the legislature that is constantly saying, well, not too much reforms, but.
You mentioned the opioid crisis, and Virginia asks, is there a movement to address the opioid crisis in Pennsylvania? I mean, a number of states are suing.
Well, once again,
companies.
You know, it's a familiar refrain. Our governor, his response by declaring it an actual emergency and implementing a rash of programs and interventions, it was cited as a national model by the American Medical Association. And, you know, the governor fully supports treating it like the crisis that it is and diverting resources. And for the first time since this awful scourge hit, deaths are actually down now in Pennsylvania. So it's an issue that is at the forefront of the governor's concern. He has a distinguished track record of stepping up regardless of politics. It's saying this is critical. We need to address this. And he has taken action in through every avenue he is able to at his power as governor.
Do you disagree with the governor on anything?
Yes. He claims that a hot dog is a sandwich. And I find that troubling in ways that I can't fully articulate right now.
I'm not getting involved in this argument.
And another way, I want to choose his word. He loves candy corn. And once again, that's a bridge too far. I love the man. But when you start arguing that a hot dog's a sandwich or candy corn is, oh, my God. So that causes some friction, it's some awkward back and forth.
But seriously, no, are there some disagreements? I mean, things that you disagree with
him about? I'm not aware of any, because I want people to make sure they understand politically, whether you agree with him or not on every issue, he is a fundamentally moral, kind, compassionate, just a good dude. You know, I've seen his face light up when he knows he can just go home and have dinner with Frances, his wife, or when he, you know, we get off and we walk into like a rest area and people come up and like, hey, whatever. And he's like, you want some fries? Like he just got to, and he shares his French fries with just random. I mean, just you see him behave in a way that when no one's looking or there aren't any cameras, and he's just a good guy. And and Pennsylvania knows that. And that's why he's been elected to two terms. And it's why I hold him out as an example for Democrats nationally.
Do you want to be governor of Pennsylvania?
More than anything, I want to get every individual out of our prison system. Right.
But you could move that process along as governor.
No, I have a unique opportunity right now. I have a governor that is in full agreement, and we have a process that is documented. It's constitutionally established, and that's the way right now. And that's my magnificent obsession. And I am haunted that, but for a random intervention, George and Naomi would be on track to die in prison, or as some of these other individuals that we've been able to get out. And, I won't stop until we're able to get as many of these out as we possibly can. And
but there is an election in a couple of years.
I'm not speculating on my future. But what I will speculate on is how hard I'm willing to work to make sure that these individuals don't die in prison. Because like I said, if you're not moved by the morality, like the financial aspect of it, and what does that say about us as a society? The indifference and the random nature of our criminal justice system should horrify each and every one of us, because it may not be your turn right now, but the next time it could be. And, prisons should be filled with people that should be there, not some random mandatory. And think about this: life without parole for second degree murder is the ultimate mandatory minimum. You know, the penalty is the same as premeditated murder.
A question from John, and we're almost out of time here. He wants to know whether Pennsylvania will embrace a $15 minimum wage. It was voted on in Philadelphia, but do you see that coming?
The gov is all about raising the minimum wage. Your own senator here in Philadelphia, Tartaglione, is a champion for raising the wage. Can you imagine being in deadlocked with two governing bodies, the House and the Senate, where the most the Senate would agree to raising our minimum wage from $7.25 an hour to $9.50. The Senate agreed to that, but the House won't even take it up yet. Like, can you imagine being hardened at a level that you believe that an hour of labor, if, you know, I believe all work has dignity, but so if all work has dignity, all work should have dignified pay. And $9.50 isn't adequate. But once again, you're hamstrung by a legislature that, for whatever reason, denies that. But absolutely, it's something that we're actively pushing for. But you have those structural barriers in place, and we need to break through.
As Lieutenant Governor, though, you preside over the state Senate.
Correct.
But do you have any powers besides breaking a tie?
I do have powers breaking a tie, and there's, just it's influence, and it's getting out like this and making the case to people. like, I fundamentally make this argument, in a blue county or a red county, we're all better off when we're all better off. And you know what? That poor single mother that you don't think should make a living wage, you're paying for her one way or the other, because, you know, whether it's you know, public assistance, whether it's Section 8 and all this. Like, why not build dignity into the equation and pay people a living wage? Because if all work has dignity, as we believe it does, all work should have dignified pay, and we certainly are a long way away from that in Pennsylvania.
Well, we have to leave it there. Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Oh, well, I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And we appreciate all your questions and comments to the show as well. You can go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.